Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Good morning. I'm Jamie Floyd, in for Brian Lehrer. Later this hour, we'll talk about the Oscar Pistorius trial that has the world's media giving rare attention to an African country. The defense case raises a conversation about race and justice. We'll talk about self-defense and the fear of a black intruder. Plus, another installment in our series of conversations about sleep cycles through the life cycles. This week, adolescence and sleep. The doctor will be in so you can get some advice and share your stories about trying to get your teenager the sleep he or she needs. And at the end of the show, we'll hear where to go birding in the big city and what you need to get going with birding as your next hobby. But first, let's do a little Bridgegate. Last month, a legal team investigating Chris Christie hired by Chris Christie, cleared the governor of any wrongdoing in the scandal, but the report may have created more questions than answers. And on Monday, interview notes from that investigation were released, and they revealed plenty about what was in the report and what was left out. New Jersey Public Radio's Matt Katz is going to get us up to speed as he's been making his way through these new documents. And as always, Matt, there are a lot of them. Hello, thanks for coming back to the show.
Sure, Jamie. Pleasure to be here.
All right. So let's talk about the notes from the interviews. These are interviews that Randy Mastro's law firm used in his investigation into Bridgegate, but there are no tapes and no full transcripts. Is that odd?
It is odd if you're doing an investigation, right? I mean, if you're really trying to get a complete full record of what happened here and share it with the public, you would think that you would want to in some way memorialize it exactly as it happened.
Yeah, I mean, I guess I wonder if we can fully trust everything in the notes. What was actually said? Does it make it into the notes if there's no recording and no transcript of what went down?
Right. I mean, we can. I mean, we're really just basing the notes are based on the recollection and the and whatever handwritten notes the lawyers who interviewed these 70 people in this investigation had. So it is you can trust it, I guess, but you definitely have to take it with a grain of salt because this is their interpretation of what was said. And we also don't know what may have been left out. I mean, is it possible that some things were said, let's say, by the governor in one of his three interviews with lawyers that wasn't included in the report? Maybe the investigators didn't think it was important at the time, or maybe they kept it out intentionally. We're not sure. I mean, Randy Mastro, the lawyer, says it's as complete a record as he could have provided.
Right. Healthy dose of reporter skepticism, right?
That's right. That's
All right. Well, we knew from the original investigation that one of the lawyers at Mastro's firm who was part of the investigation was Deborah Wong Yang, and she was a close friend of Christie's, right?
Yeah, they served as U.S. attorneys at the same time, and they had vacation together actually at a wild game ranch in Texas while they were U.S. attorneys with their families.
Yeah,
and he had actually hired her when he was U.S. attorney after she had left her office with a lucrative private contract as some sort of consultant. So they knew each other well, and she was actually one of the three attorneys who was in the room interviewing Christie in this supposed investigation.
Huh. Was there anyone else at Mastro's firm with personal ties to the governor or to any of his aides?
Well, Mastro himself, and he's said he's never met the governor before this, but he'd worked for Rudy Giuliani. I mean, for many, many, many years, Mastro did. And Rudy Giuliani is an ally of the governor. He's actually been his most high-profile defender through all of this. They have a lot of associates in common. I mean, a lot of Christie's top aides used to work for Giuliani. So, you know, they didn't know each other, but they were of the same world. So two of the three attorneys who were interviewing the governor in these three different interviews, which were not recorded, had ties to him.
and one vacationed with him.
That's correct.
And you've
That's
been right. reporting about how Christie staffers were intricately involved in securing endorsements, especially from Democratic mayors for him in the last election. Was there anything illegal going on there?
We don't know. And we don't really have enough information to know, but it's definitely something that prosecutors will be looking at. Because what we, you know, the foundation of all of this is whether Christie was going after mayors for political reasons. And we know that mayors have come forward and said he did go after them because they didn't endorse him, because they didn't approve a development he wanted. So this is a big question. Did he use his government staff for political purposes? And what we see is that the same people who were on his government tax-funded staff were also going out and trying to secure endorsements from mayors, particularly Democratic endorsements, because that's what Christie wanted. And then that's what these interviews show. Now, it's not it's legal and it's kosher if this was happening on off hours and if this was happening on their own time and if they didn't use government resources for these clearly political ends. But there's some information in these interviews that indicate otherwise, like a government employee going to lunch with a mayor during the day, during the week, and talking about an endorsement at that lunch. Now, did he take a vacation day that day? Did he use a half a day? I mean, there are certain ways of getting around this, but the documents certainly pose these questions, whether government resources were used for political purposes. And that's something that prosecutors go after politicians for all the time. So it's something that could be there with the various, I think we have three now investigations going on. This is something that they could be looking at.
And how many hundreds of pages of documents are we talking about in this current, what I like to call document dump?
So there's about 400 some odd pages of these summaries of interviews with 70 people. Hmm. Then there's the Mastro report. This is the final conclusion of the internal investigation. Right. And that's like 300 something pages.
And the work of the journalist, i.e. you, is to the glamorous,
yes. Oh, it's extremely
exciting
glamorous.
Work of yes. the journalist is to dig through those documents, the report itself and the underlying documents, and look for something new, see
right.
whether they reveal anything new about how the Intergovernmental Affairs Department did its work, or I guess the original scandal that started all of this off, right?
Exactly right, exactly right. And to give you a sense of how it works, so the report is 300-something pages, and then there's footnotes. So then you go to and that's kind of where the interesting stuff is, because that's where the supporting material is. So you go to the footnotes, and the footnotes then send you to exhibits. So I basically have like three windows open at all times on my computer. And the exhibits are where you find the emails and the correspondence between government officials. And for somebody like myself who's been covering Christie for more than 3 years, this is so fascinating, because most of my records requests to Christie have been rejected. I've looked for correspondence and other materials, all been rejected. But now here we have just thousands of pages that really shed light on how the governor's office worked. And some of it is, as you know, some of it is just like office gossip and you know, people who were together romantically and people who didn't like each other. But some of it is really, really interesting and sheds light on how government dollars were being used for government and political work. So,
but it's your job, Matt, to connect the dots, right?
Right.
Does it make it into the official report, the details, or do you have to connect the dots from the underlying documents?
Some of the details are in the report, but from what we've seen is that the report seemed to have, one observer yesterday told me it was almost as if they had a conclusion and then they tried to find the support to reach that conclusion. I mean, the conclusion is that Christie is exonerated and he did nothing wrong here. And there's And there's no evidence even in the appendices that show Christie ordered the lanes closed to the George Washington Bridge, for example. But there is information in the appendices that indicate that the conclusion, maybe it didn't, it ignored some things. It didn't talk about how maybe a certain cabinet member had said something else to somebody that might have led to a certain conclusion that things were that whereas a mayor could have felt revenge against him or her. So that's what we're all trying to tease out right
and,
now.
And again, you're only seeing the notes from the interviews, no
right.
tapes, no transcripts. And five of the key players in this whole scandal were not interviewed for the report. Correct? Did the interviews that the notes detailed shed any new light on the motivations of any of those people who were not interviewed for the report? Bridget Ann Kelly, the former deputy chief of staff, et cetera, the former campaign manager,
right.
the three Port Authority appointees, et cetera.
Yeah, it's really the top five most significant witnesses
right,
were
right.
not interviewed. Now, in fairness, these people aren't talking to the Democratic legislators who are
yes.
investigating this as well. So
yes.
they're
We should
them.
Point out that the state legislature is conducting its own
right.
Bridgegate investigation. But is there anything
yeah.
in what you've been looking at that shed some light on the motivations of the folks who could not be interviewed for this report?
So one of the motivations that the Master Report comes to is that, and even though they didn't talk to these two people, is that Bill Stepien, Christie's former campaign manager, and Bridget Ann Kelly, the woman who wrote the Time for Some Traffic Problems in Fort Lee email, that they had a relationship. And that was some way a motivation and a contributing factor to all of this. Now, they didn't interview these people, but they found out from others that they had had this personal relationship. And the conclusion of the Master Report seems to be that they had broken up, that he had Stepien had dumped Kelly in early August, and then she had sent this email. Which both sheds light on her state of mind and also the fact that Stepien had nothing to do with it. So this is a conclusion that the Master Report reaches. But without having spoken to the two individuals involved in what was already described as a kind of secretive relationship, it's hard for me to subscribe to that same conclusion. And there's also evidence in the interviews I'm reading and all the supporting documents that it was actually Stepien himself who initiated the relationship. So if we're really like kind of gossiping and reading sort of these sexual tea leaves here, we could conclude that maybe Bridget Kelly was not upset that they broke up. Who knows? But this is one of the examples of sort of conclusions that were reached about people who were not interviewed, and there are still open questions
get us back then to this T100 list of towns, speaking specifically now about some of what should be contained in the report. What is their significance? How does it relate to the lane closures in Fort Lee? And I guess those mayor's allegations you referred to earlier, that Sandy Aid was withheld because the Hoboken mayor, for example, wouldn't play ball with the governor's office.
Right. What these documents show us is that the government office really targeted certain towns where they wanted the mayor's endorsement. And they had a list. There were lists all over the governor's office. And one of the lists was the T100 list, which is the top 100 towns that the governor would go after. So that means they would do town hall meetings there. That means they would fast track if the mayor had an issue. They would fast track a meeting with a cabinet official, for example, who can help them out. These were the towns that the governor wanted to presumably win in re-election, get the mayoral endorsement and whatnot. And then there were other towns, and there were euphemisms used for them, like no need to call and check in on that mayor. Don't bend over backwards for Hoboken Mayor Don Zimmer, for example, there was an email sent, don't bend over backwards for Zimmer. This was right after Zimmer had announced that she would not be endorsing Christie for re-election. So, you know, the heart of all of this, of all of the accusations that have come up, is whether Christie was exacting revenge on political enemies or people who were not supporting him. And that's why these lists are so important, because they indicate who he favored and who he did not. And then we could look at those he did not and see if he was really going after them and seeking revenge on them.
All right, we're going to take a call. I'm Jamie Floyd in for Brian Lehrer, and we are talking about the latest developments in the so-called Bridgegate scandal with New Jersey Public Radio's Matt Katz. And our caller is Gussie. She's calling from Brooklyn, New York. Gussie, you are on WMYC. Thank you for calling. Are you with us, Gussie? I can hear Gussie, but I don't think Gussie can hear me. All right. Well, I don't think I have.
Yes, hi.
Oh,
hi.
Go. I'm glad you're there, Gussie. Go ahead.
Yes. Two points I want to make. I mean, if this was happening for 4 days, how was it that the governor had no knowledge of this?
And did you have, while we have you there, Gussie, did you have a second question?
Yes. And why are the New Jersey taxpayers slipping the bill for his attorney? It's his problem.
All right. Well, I guess The first question really isn't a question for the reporter, right, Matt? That's what this investigation is supposed to answer. Okay. How did the governor not know about this? But you certainly can answer the question. I don't know if you could hear, Gussie, who's paying for this and how? And I guess the answer is the taxpayers, right?
Sure. And I'll also answer the first one, at least from what Christie said.
Ahead.
I mean, Christie said there was traffic all the time in New Jersey and going to New York, which is true, right? And he said it didn't reach his level of consciousness that this was anything out of the ordinary or particularly strange. So
claim at the time that there was a traffic study being conducted?
That's right.
Leading to the lane closures that led to an inordinate amount of traffic for those 4 days.
And to Christie and his people, they said this seemed like a plausible explanation, and they didn't really pursue it any further until much later.
They say,
As far as the legal fees, this is going to cost, I mean, untold millions of dollars to New Jersey taxpayers. So New Jersey taxpayers are paying $650 an hour for Christie's attorneys. Now, the justification for that is that he was subpoenaed, and they needed to hire lawyers to help address the fact that he was subpoenaed and faces all the requests for all this information, and somebody has to put it together, and they need legal counsel to do this, and he also needed to conduct an internal review. But then there's also the legislature's investigation, which taxpayers are also paying for, and that's $350 an hour for lawyers. And then this week, we found out that Bill Stepien, Christie's campaign manager, taxpayers are also paying for most of his legal fees. That's $340 an hour because he was a government official during part of the time when investigators are looking for documents. So he was working for Christie in the government office, and investigators are subpoenaing documents related to that time. So the attorney general agreed to cover his legal fees. So there's legal fees all around, and in the most peculiar instance, the legislature is subpoenaed Stepien, but Stepien is fighting the subpoena. So taxpayers are actually paying to subpoena Stepien and also paying to fight the subpoena of Stepien. So there go your property taxes, I guess.
Wow. All right. The taxpayer issue. We could do a whole segment on paying for Bridgegate.
Right.
But
oh,
let's
absolutely
not do it now. All right. So I do want to come back and tie up. And I really do appreciate Gussie's call. Thank you, Gussie, so much for calling, because I had that question on my list. And you cleared that up nicely, Matt. Thank you so much. And maybe we will come back. I'll talk with Brian and suggest that perhaps he wants to do a segment on how this is going to be paid for, how much it's going to cost, and the very different parts of the expense, the legislative investigation. You're right about Stepien having a whole different part of this than the rest of it. So it's fascinating, that alone. But I want to tie up this issue of the mayors, because Hoboken Mayor Dawn Zimmer said that her city didn't get as much Sandy aid as it should have because she didn't support the development project. We've talked about that a little bit. But my question for you, Matt, is so far in your digging around in these supporting documents and the report, does any of it clear up anything regarding that situation?
We did get a little bit of new information, and we found out that there were actually mistakes made in allotting Sandy funding to Hoboken. We never knew about this before. It came out in the documents. There were 550 what the administration calls data entry errors. So people, towns that applied for a certain kind of grant, they were not 550 times these grants requests were not processed properly. And Hoboken had 13 requests, and only 3 of their requests were processed, and they were only granted one of their requests, which was for a generator to pay for situations like flooding, to handle the electricity with situations like flooding. So Hoboken, in fact, may really have lost out on Sandy aid after all this. I mean, this is what Zimmer alleged from the get-go. Now the Christie administration says it was a mistake, and maybe it was. So this whole process of cleaning up the mistakes and handling Sandy aid going forward for this particular grant is being handled by Christie's environmental commissioner. But in the documents, the environmental commissioner is heard talking about the mayor of Hoboken as part of the Birkenstock crowd. He's making a disparaging remark about her being anti-development. So even though there's an explanation for why she may have lost out on Sandy aid, which is that they made a data entry mistake, there's now more questions that this all leads to about whether the administration really did have something out for her and didn't like her in some way.
Well, he's going to lose the Birkenstock vote.
That's right.
A lot of us wear Birkenstocks. All right, we're going to take one more call. And it is John, who is in Fort Lee. And I understand that John wants to follow up specifically, Matt, on something we were talking about earlier. John, you are on WMYC with Matt Katz of New Jersey Public Radio.
Can you hear me?
Yes, we can. I understand you're in Fort Lee, New Jersey.
Yeah, I'm overlooking. I pulled over to the side, and there's plenty of traffic today too. So,
Thank you for pulling over, by the way.
Oh yeah, I always do. So if anybody wanted to close any lanes, it's a complete disaster. I sympathize with the people who live around here. I live in Paramus, but I travel all the time. But I just think they should try and expedite this operation, this whole investigation, because it's dragged on way too long. They should try and get to the bottom of it, interview this Kelly and Steppy, or subpoena them, get an interview, and come to some type of conclusion and end it. I mean, I believe that Christie probably knew something. I'm sure he's trying to cover up and hide something. I don't think he approved it or ordered it, but they should really come to some conclusion, because the more it drags on, the less punch it has. And people in New Jersey are really getting tired of it. It's getting to the point where it's like the Malaysia Flight 370. It loses power after all this time. People lose interest in it.
Well, thank you very much for your call, John. I do have, Matt, a couple of folks on Twitter who are claiming that we only focus on Republican scandals, and I'd like to remind them that we spent plenty of time on Anthony Weiner and Elliot Spitzer when they were in trouble in their various capacities. So we are even-handed in our coverage of high-profile and powerful players when they are being investigated. But perhaps, Matt, to answer the caller's question, you could explain why it is that this particular investigation could not or did not speak with those 5 key players.
They refuse to speak, and they've lawyered up, and they are fighting any subpoenas and other attempts to talk to them. And that's part of the reason why this is dragging on, as the caller said. I mean,
don't they, Matt, have a right under the Fifth Amendment not to incriminate themselves because they are facing potential prosecution?
That is what they're arguing, and that is what, so far, at least Stepien and Kelly have succeeded in court in arguing. Their documents were subpoenaed, and they pled the Fifth Amendment, and the judge agreed with them and said that they don't have to provide their documents. But the legislature may go after them with a more narrow request for documents, and next month the legislature is planning on calling witnesses to testify in hearings at the State House. So Unfortunately for the caller, this is going to be going on for quite some time. And the U.S. attorney, this only started 3 months and 1 week ago. So the U.S. attorney operates on his own time frame, and this investigation could drag on for months and, you know, potentially years.
Good reminder, the actual bridge closure was quite some time ago, but the investigation is fairly short-lived thus far.
Right.
Well, thank you so much, Matt Katz, for being with us today.
Thank you, Jamie.
I've been speaking with New Jersey Public Radio's Matt Katz, and I am Jamie Floyd in for Brian Lehrer. Up next, Oscar Pistorius, what you have not been hearing about.